Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, guys, how's it going out there? I need to tell you something. I'm on week four of these Invisaligners, and I'm a little... I think I'm doing okay. Like, there's no way I am going to follow through on this. I got 10 weeks. I'm on week four, but I feel like my mouth, I feel like I'm wearing chewing gum all the time. Okay. So I'm not quitting for you guys. So just tolerate it. If it sounds funny, too fucking bad. Too fucking bad. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate you tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn, the best radio station in the entire world, and Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, okay? So anyway, I have this guest on today, and he's looking at me with this sort of like poker face. Let's see if I can like get his reaction why I describe him. Anyway, I'm actually a little nervous. I'm going to say this because I get nervous sometimes because this guy is really, really good at doing an interview show, and his name is Jim Tews. If you know anything about comedy, you definitely know who he is. But if you don't know anything about comedy or not a lot about comedy, maybe not. I don't know. In most comedians, I think he's very successful. Really, I mean, he plays at the Comedy Cellar a lot. He tours with Todd Barry. He was on Last Comic Standing. I mean, that's a big fucking deal, right? Right, guys? There's a lot of stuff. I mean, he does like video, audio, he does animation, he's good. I mean, he's good. He's made it. He's kind of made it. Do you feel like you've made it, Jim?
I guess I would say that only because if I would tell myself 10, 15 years ago, like, this is where you're going to be then. It's not what I would have expected, but I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you always want more. You can't,
right.
You can't get rid of that.
Right, we're all, like, really ambitious.
Yeah.
Here.
I was also going to ask if you could curse on this show, but I found out pretty fast that that's not a big fucking deal.
Yeah, I think somebody, I always remind people, I think somebody got a blowjob on air in the studio once. So, not in this actual studio, but... So I think that pretty much says we have no boundaries. So anyway, Jim, I'm talking about you, Jim. Mm-hmm. Jim does this podcast that I personally don't know how I came across it exactly, but it is so good. I really, really, really love it. It's called Quitting Comedy. And what Jim does is he starts out every episode asking, you know, talking with comedians about like whatever made them quit comedy. And what you wind up finding out is all these comedians who are really, really talented and doing really well. Like how hard it is. It's a really good talk about the creative process for any creative person and the struggle behind what you imagine a successful person, what their struggle is. And, I think it's just a really great, podcast about the creative process, and I'm not going to say this on the air.
Okay.
Anyway, I think it's better than Marc Maron. I mean, for that. For that. Anyway, the gold
standard.
I can't
talk to musicians like he can, so.
Oh, yeah. I don't care about musicians. That's why I like your podcast. I got really tired of Mark's podcast because he had too many starlets on and they're not that interesting. So I'm switching over to you. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
So here's the thing about Jim, folks. This is what I'm going to tell you about Jim. That's really different. And first of all, there's this line in his bio that says he has yet to completely accept his parents' divorce. So that certainly goes well with our show, right? He's got divorced parent issues. But the thing is, I'm going to let Jim describe this a little bit, but he's from a very blue collar background. Your parents didn't go to college,
no.
Right?
Mm-mm.
And, you know, which is very unusual because you're in a very intellectual world now, aren't you?
Yeah, I would say I somehow found myself a little more on that side of things.
So also the other thing that I think is really unusual about Jim is that he actually signed up in the military. How many creative people do you know ever went into the military? I think it's kind of hot, though. Did girls like that?
I think they liked it. I don't know if they were responding so much to the fact that I was in the military or the fact that I had lost like 20 pounds in boot camp and got into shape.
Oh, yeah. You're in good shape. He's
20.
In really good shape.
When I was in high school, I was fat. And then immediately after high school, went into basic training and then lost so much weight.
Well, my friend Margo and I always say never date a guy who couldn't make it in the military. You want a manly man. So
it was the Coast Guard.
It was the Coast Guard.
I call that America's most sensitive service. But it's still.
So okay. I thought what we would do today is learn a little bit about Jim's background so we can imagine that. And then what I was saying to Jim before he came on was that I learned about Jim from doing my research. Do your own fucking research, okay? But I did mine. And I found out that Jim is from this blue-collar background in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then what happened was he wound up going into the military, probably because that was like your way out of your little hovel in Allentown. And
yeah, it was kind of a, like, here's an easier-ish way to do something that feels like it counts.
Right. And then he was also in advanced placement until 10th grade when he got kicked out. So I have a theory that Jim might have gotten his shit together from being in the military. And we're going to find out about that. But in order to even understand that, and that's how come he's a successful comedian, because like your website and everything is like, you're so buttoned up. Do you think so?
Yeah, there's definitely a I don't want to call it neuroses, but like I'm aware of the presentation.
Yeah.
And I feel, you know, uh-huh. I still iron my shirts.
So were you like that before being in the Coast Guard?
No.
Okay. So we're going to find out about that. So in order to understand your background, Jim, can you tell us a little bit of, give us a picture of like what growing up was like and where you lived and what happened in 10th grade and your direction into the military? How's that?
Well, Allentown is the third largest city in Pennsylvania. It was home to Bethlehem Steel. Mm-hmm. For a long, long time, which was, you know, so that region was really killing it for a while. And that's when, you know, like my grandfather worked at the steel. My dad worked at Bethlehem Steel. The people on our block worked at Bethlehem Steel. Like, and it started when I was a kid, it started to go away,
crumble.
Was
your dad employed all the time?
No, he was unemployed for quite a while, right when I was born. And
so sucks.
Yeah. And he ended up, I mean, he had a bunch of odd jobs. I remember when I was a kid, like, mm-hmm. He stocked the vending machines in bathrooms with mm-hmm. condoms and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go on his vending machine routes, you know, while he did that. Then he ended up becoming a police officer.
Oh, that's and good though.
Yeah. That was his dream.
Oh.
So yeah, when he and my mom split. He had a bunch of odd jobs for a while, then went and pursued the cop thing.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a stepsister and two half-sisters. And the mm-hmm. stepsister didn't come into my life until I was about five. Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like you grew up with her?
Yeah, totally.
So would that be your mom's husband?
That was my mom's husband.
So your parents, so what did your mom do? Did she have a job?
Yeah, my mom was, she owned her own insurance claims adjustment business.
So she sounds successful.
Yeah, and she started as a secretary at another office.
And then
became the first claims adjuster in Eastern Pennsylvania, female claims adjuster in Eastern Pennsylvania.
Ah, so now it's starting to look, that's where you get your, like, you know, you get your shit together from your mom.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of it is from my mom.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad too, but they have very different motives, I think.
What does that mean?
Oh, my mom, I don't know. My mom, I think it just took my dad a while, maybe. I don't know if it was a motive thing.
Oh, but yeah. To get organized.
Yeah, where my mom was
in the military.
Yeah, my mom was a little more like, I'm going to buckle in and like...
get this
done. Yeah, go full throttle.
So do you remember, how old were you when your parents got divorced?
Like 3.
Really? Do you think it had anything to do with like your dad's job and stuff like that?
Or there was a little bit of that. There was a little bit of that, but he had hit some fidelity issues prior to. So it was definitely...
There's a combination.
Yeah, there's a combination.
So do you remember them getting divorced or can you sum up in two minutes or less like the effect it had on you? You can't.
I don't remember it actively happening. I just remember kind of like I have a handful of memories of like them being in the same house a lot and then not being in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually other partners coming around.
They both had other partners?
Yeah. They both remarried.
That's good, right?
Totally.
I mean,
yeah, I get along with...
That's a thing.
I have to say, I joke about them being divorced and how, you know, and of course it affected me. But in as far as those scenarios go, I hit the lottery because they both give a shit. They both always did give a shit about me and wanted to make sure that mm-hmm. I was taken care of. And then the people that they ended up with also gave a shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I got very lucky.
Do you, when it says here in your bio, this is the whole reason you're here, Jim. He has yet to completely accept his parents' divorce. Well, I guess you can joke about it because you have. That's what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, I joke about it to them because I think it's funny to make them slightly uncomfortable.
Oh, see?
When I do shows in my hometown, a lot of times both parties will come. Oh. And then I joke about how this is finally the time that I've parent trapped them.
Oh.
And they do get along, you know, they catch up with each other once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's kind of funny now knowing like being an adult, it having history of relationships, successful and not successful. I can see why that they would not have worked.
Right. But we chatted a little bit and you seem like pretty healthy as far as your own relationships go, right?
Yeah.
You've managed to have long-term relationships.
Yeah.
You're in one now.
Yes.
Yes.
And I don't know. I try to be pretty active with that. I was, again, my mom was pretty mm-hmm. adamant, like, you have to care about this stuff. Like, if you're going to be with somebody.
In my most superficial evaluation, I would say that Jim seems like a pretty good example of what being together and being in a relationship is from my very first impression.
Well, yeah, I get a lot of compliments as a couple, which is nice.
Really? That's good.
it feels nice. Like, oh, cool. Hopefully this won't blow
good.
Up.
You're making it work. You're making it work.
I mean, I've had bad ones. I've had failed. I was engaged once and that took
blew
a dive.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I made the dive, but
you got out of it.
Yeah.
Like not at the wedding.
Oh no. It wasn't like at the altar. It wasn't that bad.
Was it like months beforehand?
No, we didn't even have a date set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'd been engaged, I think, a year though.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean,
it
you
still
know.
Wasn't cool, but
so anyway, so all in all, it sounds like you actually were not too traumatized by the divorce, if we can say that.
No, I'll tell you if I'm really diving into it, like the thing I noticed, it was more the circumstances of the way the separation and the custody stuff worked, because I went back and forth every other week.
Mm-hmm.
From mom's to dad's.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this life where I was like, first of all, like I couldn't, you know, like when you're a kid, you have like maybe own 10 albums and a skateboard and a guitar or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are your prized possessions.
Mm-hmm.
I go to my dad's, I have 5 albums, my skateboard's there, but I don't have the guitar. I go to my mom's the next week. I have 5 albums. My guitar's there, but I don't have the skateboard.
That's crazy making.
Like, and then that's of, and then you're also like I said, like they got remarried and started their lives with their other partners.
Oh man!
I'm stepping into
somebody else's world
each week.
Did your mom move in with her part? Did they move in with their partners?
Yeah.
So that's two households that you had to like readjust from.
Yeah.
So you must be angry about that.
I'm not.
I mean, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I'm not angry, but I'm definitely like, it makes me go like, oh, like that. That's probably where, you know, this little tick or that little habit.
It's annoying,
comes
but
from.
It's not like, yeah, I could see.
Yeah, I wasn't
it being,
like, I wasn't getting abused.
No,
which
no,
is
but
one
it,
of those.
It reminds me of dating a guy that like lives in another neighborhood and you have to drag your shit around and
yeah.
You never have the dress you want to wear to work. Crap
or
like
you're just, I just felt like I'm a visitor, you know?
Yeah, no,
I'm a visitor.
Get it.
And sometimes everyone's excited to see me. Other times it's like, we had a bunch of other shit going on.
Yeah.
And now you're like, we got to make sure you get to baseball practice.
But did you live with one? Did you go to school? Did you live with the same parent, your mom, I'm assuming, when you went to school every day?
No, that was the thing. I went to school in Allentown and my mom would drive me on the days that I was, she lived outside of Allentown. My dad lived in Allentown.
So was it like 2-3 days in a row and then switching?
It was like, no, like every Friday. Like Friday, my dad would pick me up and I'd be at his house for the weekend and then the following week. And then the next Friday after school, mom would pick me up and I'd be there for that
weekend. Alternating weeks.
Right.
Oh, that's
and then it's
fucked
like,
up.
Carrying, you got to, you know, I'm like, you got to remember what you have coming. Like, did you bring your books? Do you have your saxophone?
Oh, yeah. Because also. Yeah,
like, all that weird.
Yeah, we have to like tell everybody that Jim was in band, in his marching band in school.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually in a lot of your comedy, but it's also kind of what I think might have given you the idea of joining the Army.
Coast Guard.
Which
yeah.
Is-
well, that was a little more inspired by family history, I guess. Well, the military mm-hmm. thing. My dad was. He didn't want to get drafted, so he into Vietnam, so he joined the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had gotten a note from the doctor to mm-hmm. allow him to join, even though he had a mm-hmm. surgery on his hip and he had some screws in his hip.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in basic training for like 2 weeks, and they were like, "You can't be here. This is not allowed." And they discharged him. My grandfather was a Marine.
Ah,
grandfather on the other side was in the Army.
So it seemed normal to you,
right? Yeah. Everybody,
yeah,
uncles.
That's what everybody did.
That's what everybody did. If they weren't drafted, they enlisted.
Right. So it seemed like a good option for you.
Yeah.
So
and I just found the Coast right. Guard.
So I want to find out what happened, like how, like in 10th grade, what happened? You're obviously a very bright guy and you excelled in school. And then did you get distracted at a certain point or what happened
So in middle school, I think or elementaries, early elementary school is one of those things where they're like, they kind of pull you aside and they're like, hey, you know, you're testing really, I don't know how they explained it to me then, but they were like, you're testing really high on a lot of these things. So you're every day, you're going to go, or every couple of days or whatever, you're going to go for an hour long class with these other kids to work on special projects that, you know, like
right,
stimulate you and whatever.
So you won't be bored.
And I mean, I had no idea what was happening at the time. Like, I'm just like, oh, cool. I'm with these other kids for an hour a day in the
mm-hmm.
library.
Mm-hmm.
And then carried on to middle school where I was in classes with those kids and then obviously into high mm-hmm. school. And I was never academically much of an achiever as far as like grades went.
Mm-hmm.
It was always like.
Were you not that motivated? Were you not interested?
I would just get bored. I have focus issues for sure. Mm-hmm. I had them then.
Mm-hmm.
I still have them, but it has been a thing that I've worked and I've been medicated for it once or twice, mm-hmm. but I never really liked.
What would you get? Is it
I took Concerta for a while.
Oh yeah.
And I just never. I was always just kind of like I don't want to. I like the way my brain works. Let me figure this out. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and now at this point, like, I've found my way into.
Yeah, it works for you.
A field that, yeah, it doesn't really matter. But at the time, it was like, you're not getting good grades. You're in all these classes with kids who are super smart and planning on going to good schools and all this stuff. And I was in a I was in a big public school. Mm-hmm. So there was a very big difference between what life was like in those classes and then mm-hmm. the rest of the classes.
Especially in Allen, we got to remember Allentown, Pennsylvania on the way down. There's probably a huge opioid problem there now, I bet.
I don't know about that, but I would not surprise me. I mean, there's, we have issues of it in my family, so I can, I don't know if I'd credit it to the region or my family.
Well,
but
you know, it's sad. It's
certainly
sad
easy to get
this
there.
This country's so fucked up. Like I mean, we could, you know, that's definitely been covered on the media, how fucked up the country is. So anyway, so it sounds like, so you were you getting really bad grades? Were you getting pressure, or like how did that go down?
It was bad grades, and then that kind of leads to self-esteem issues.
Yeah.
And then I had a guidance counselor, like basically tell my parents, like, he's not college material.
Wow.
Like you can take him out of his classes and put him in, and he might get better grades and he'll feel better. And I think maybe she had the best intentions, and it was like a weird time. I actually talked to her when I did Last Comic Standing. Because
really?
I think
you mean, how come? I mean, was it a coincidence? Or
it was I told the producers that story because they were like, how did you end up in comedy? And I was like, well, I did this.
Mm-hmm.
And then this led me to the military. And then being in the military was felt so restricting that I needed to do something to get out of it. And then I started doing comedy. That was my outlet. So we talked to that guidance counselor. She did not remember saying that.
So did they interview her? Is that what happened? Like,
yeah, they interviewed both of us.
So if we go and look at Last Comic Standing,
I think they put it on the internet.
We can see that replay.
I think if they didn't air that on the show, but they did. They did my profile online.
I'd love to
find that
and post this with your, when we post your episode.
Yeah, I think it's still up there.
Try to find that.
I haven't looked in a while.
So anyway, she like fucked with you. She fucked with you and your self-esteem, and she was doing her best. She wanted to take the pressure off of you, I bet.
Right.
What were you like? Were you like a nervous kid, or were you like an apathetic kid?
Daydreamer.
Did you have friends? Did you have
I did. I was good in that regard. Uh-huh. I would say I was one of those kids who was like, I was definitely on the nerdy side. You know, I was like, mm-hmm. I said, I was like short and fat. I had a weird bowl cut. and I played saxophone and I was in ROTC.
And you were in band. And ROTC, was that weird? That would be really weird at my high school. Was it weird?
I mean, it was not
sort
cool.
Was it sort of normal where you were?
It was normal-ish.
Normal-ish?
Yeah.
Was everybody taking drugs and drinking except for you? Or were you part of that?
I mean, I did some drinking in high school, but very little. I mean, a lot of that has to do with, like, you know, again, like the going back and forth week to week kind of thing. Like, your parents, like, know when you're supposed to be where you're at. And then at some point, you're also responsible for yourself a lot. And it's like, you know, I didn't have time to like
fuck it up.
Yeah. And then also my dad moved away from Allentown when I was in high school, and we just used my grandmother's address so I could keep going to that school.
Oh man.
So now I went to high school, and then my parents both lived about a half hour away from where all my friends live.
Oh, so that sucked. But you didn't have access to.
Yeah, I got into most of my trouble like at my and I was a dishwasher at a German food restaurant, and then I worked in an amusement park. So I was like, that's where I was doing the like after shifts, you know, smoking cigarettes and drinking, and that's where I was getting into trouble. But
at your job.
At my job.
Where at least you were getting paid for it or making money in that regard. So did you how about, I think, church? Did you go to church?
My family wasn't real big on church. When I was younger, my mom went through kind of like we went to this Mennonite church.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar with Mennonite?
Like, yeah, it's like Amish light. Amish people with weird outfits.
Yeah, but they didn't. Like, most of them didn't wear the outfits. But it was still very conservative, and I never liked it. I was pretty vocal about not liking it. In fact, and then my dad started going too, but my dad went to a Lutheran church, and I got along with those kids a lot better.
But church wasn't part of the influence.
Not really.
No.
That wasn't the reason I wasn't doing drugs. It was because I had a dad who was a cop, and my parents were.
But that's not why you were like nerdy.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I was just that way because I was like, you know, scared of screwing up. I was scared of
getting in trouble and getting put in jail.
Yeah, and just not super adventurous, maybe.
Yeah.
And I had stuff I liked to do. I played music, and I loved skateboarding when I was a kid.
Cool.
And that can lead you to other bad behaviors, but it's also it's a matter of who you're doing it with. If you're not doing it with people who do those things, then you're.
So what was your head like when you signed up for ROTC and the Coast Guard? So you were in ROTC in high school?
Yeah, it's like junior ROTC. Yeah.
And why did you do that?
That's a really good question. I don't even know. I think it was one of those things where like my dad was probably like, hey, you should give that a try. And he was just like, try it, you know.
So you just took it for granted.
And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll try this.
And where was your head when you signed up for going to the Coast Guard? Did you think like, oh, I'm not going to go to college. I suck. Were you thinking like I suck?
Well, I mean, there was a couple factors. I mean, I was in the junior ROTC and it was Navy junior ROTC. So it was like this, I had like the military culture was like, maybe not a super appealing to me, but I was not turned off by it. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, if you did ROTC in high school, you went into the military pay grade higher even.
Oh, and, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So
you were thinking I'm going to the military.
Yeah, because I was not good in school. I didn't have any behavior issues, but my parents were basically like, they didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
I had one cousin who went to college and he's a doctor now, been a doctor forever, but, it was just not a thing. Like they didn't know to go like,
and they weren't creative people really.
No. I mean, you know, they are in their own right. They're
right,
not like,
of course, everyone is. That sounds so patronizing, but it's true.
Yeah.
They didn't take you to museums. Like my Jew parents took me to museums.
Not a whole lot.
In Manhattan.
If I asked for it, you know, they were fairly encouraging.
Yeah.
At times, but then also discouraging because it was a little more like, we want you to be okay when you are an adult.
Right. Right. Right.
We don't want you to be some like flaky,
right,
weirdo. We want you to have a foundation, basically.
But and also, going into the Coast Guard is a way to sort of like have a career without going to college. And then you get paid for being in the Coast Guard.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't need, so it's like you get a job right out of college, basically, don't you?
Yeah. And that was also part of the appeal, you know. And my parents also told me, like, we can't pay for you to go to college.
Right.
And if your grades were like this in high school, they're not going to mysteriously improve.
Right. No, it makes sense. What were your ambitions at the time? Like, what were you thinking?
I'm still the same way that I was then, where I'm a little bit scattered. And that was also, I think, a concern of theirs. Mm-hmm. And it's still a concern of mine.
I get it.
where you're like, it's like, well, what do you want to do? Like you play music, you love to draw and paint and do those things. I had a DJ phase in high school. Mm-hmm. I was in bands. I was, you know, I was an amusement park caricature artist. Like, I think it was just like, I didn't know what I wanted to pick.
But were you thinking like something creative? Like you don't seem the kind of person that, you don't seem naturally the kind of person that would jive well in the Coast Guard. So
no,
did
I was
you
naturally,
have any sense of that or no?
I was naturally much more creative. I kind of thought that like I could still be both things. I could have this, I could go handle this thing that is very adult and discipline oriented because those things help you as an artist. Like,
right. So you had that awareness.
Yeah, I think so. Or like it was also just like, let me again, like I didn't want to be a fuck up. So the easiest way for me to not be a fuck up was to go sign up. And, you know, it was 1999. We were not at war. The Coast Guard's a humanitarian service. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of interesting career paths. And I was just like, yeah, this will be good. Nobody could get, everybody will get off my back. I'm not going to get graded.
You know, it's funny. Finally, you have convinced me that going into the Coast Guard was a really good idea for you. I actually see it now. But I, you know,
I don't regret it.
I have to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is such a great station to be listening to. And, you know, especially like at this time when, you know, the media is the enemy of the people. It's so not. We need your help. So you should go. You know, like we do this. This is a nonprofit organization, and all your donations are tax deductible. So you should go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate and give us some money, because it will be put to very, very, very good use. And you know what else? We have a teen squad. Did you know that? We have a teen squad for people who are not ready to sign up for the Coast Guard. You can come here and take a really amazing class with Tom Tenney, the director of the station. And it's just such a killer program. And some of the money will go. You would have been great on this, Jim. You know, you should do it. And if you've just tuned in recently, I'm here with Jim Tews, who is a very successful, talented comedian, host of Quitting Comedy. And we are talking about his childhood to his blue collar parents in Allentown and how he wound up going into the Coast Guard and subsequently a career in comedy. And we're trying to make sense of this, which is all that. It doesn't seem as linear. It's starting to seem a little more linear.
Yeah.
So anyway, What were you, I mean, part of what we want to know is what you were like before the Coast Guard and how it changed you and all that. But so can you tell us like what happened, how you went into the Coast Guard? What was that like getting used to being in the Coast Guard?
It was that part of it was 100, like just beyond culture shock.
I can't imagine.
Because even though I had a familiarity with like military culture from the junior ROTC stuff, you know, like. We even had like in high school mini boot camps where you go to a boot, like, you know, it's like being in
camp
boot camp
outside.
No, like at, you know, you go to a Navy base or an Army base in Jersey or whatever for a week and sleep in the barracks and, you know,
eat crappy
food. Do PT and eat crappy food. Yeah, and
clean toilets.
Yeah, and
but that can't prepare you for this.
No, that cannot prepare you for. Because you knew, you know, like you're still under the supervision of these adults and you're going to go back home or whatever. But this thing was just like, you know, all my friends, I went to basic training in October. So I had basically seen a lot of my friends off to college, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, like literally right. gone, drove with them to Philadelphia.
Wow.
To, you know, to wish
Tyler
them luck
Boulevard and yeah, like that.
Well, it was like Drexel.
University of Pennsylvania.
One in Pennsylvania.
Penn State.
Yeah. And, you know, it was like, that's what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
And it was cool and it seemed fun. And there were like,
marijuana everywhere.
Sure. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. girls everywhere, like party. Oh, girls, who
October,
are you?
October, it's still warm out, no clothes.
Yeah. Then I'm going to get dropped off at the, MEPS, it's called, in Philadelphia, where they just process you and put you on a shuttle to the airport. And then you go to Cape May, New Jersey. And I'm like on a bus, like pulling up to this place where I'm just in this bus with a bunch of other terrified young people. And, you know, a guy gets on there's video. You can look at videos of it online. It's kind of like funny because I follow the Coast Guard on Instagram and they were posting the one week they did like, we're going to show you what basic training is like.
Oh, wow.
And they still do it this way. I thought they would get, maybe they'd get
yeah,
softer
right,
or something,
right.
But like, you know, you're literally on a bus, you pull up, several guys get on and women. One of my drill instructors was a female. We get on the bus and they just start screaming at you to get off the bus. You know, you go and you stand in line and it's just like this chaos. And you're, you know, for the first night, you know, and the second night, and then they're figuring out who you are, what you do. You have to, you know, take a your analysis test and like you don't know anybody's name, you don't know anything, and then you realize like, oh my God, I'm completely alone right now. And I can't call my parents to come pick me up. I'm literally under contract to the United States government.
Oh my God.
And like, it was just a little bit weird. Right? You know, I'm like 18 years old. I was terrified.
Was everybody scared?
Everybody was scared. Yeah.
Some people, are there people that cannot handle it?
Yeah.
What happens if you can't handle it? Do you freak out?
Really? I mean, it's not even that, like, it's not like I was in some sort of special forces. It was just basic training. But some people, you know, like, you would just watch the first like week or two, just people are just going, just disappearing. And it's either mental breakdowns. You know, they test positive for marijuana. You know, what was the other? Oh, one girl was pregnant, didn't find out till she got there.
Mm-hmm. Just shit happens. And then they let you go. They let you out of your contract.
They let you out. Really, yeah. Like there's reasons, you know, there's valid reasons. Mm-hmm.
Did you want to stay?
I did. Well, it was one of those things where I'm like, I don't know what I would do if I went back. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to be in this for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one kid, we were like, he was overweight and like more so than I was. And so they gave him this extra job of, so he'd get a little more physical activity. He had to go get the mail. So he had to walk from every night from our barracks to the main office, grab the mail, and then come back to the barracks. And they would obviously like yell at him a little extra to go do that. And then one night we were standing in the bathroom at the sink shaving, and he started having a panic attack and just fell on the floor. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, what, you know, like we called the
MPs,
company commander, and he runs in and just starts yelling at him some more to get to calm down and breathe. He's yelling at him to calm down and breathe, and the kid's just like, and he was gone the next day. Mm. He was gone the next day.
That is sad.
Like, it was just like, oh, he couldn't handle this part of it. And I guess the logic is like, well, if you can't handle that and you're on a ship, you can't have anybody panic. Because it will set off everyone else, or you're in an emergency situation. You can't, you know. But that, there's like things like that. Like that doesn't happen in college,
right? You know? No, that's horrible. Are you kidding? So what would you like? What's your? Can you like, if you don't mind sharing, what would be like the worst thing that happened to you? Your worst incident, just so we can get an idea. Like,
for basic training.
What would you say made it really hard?
So again, like to go back to me being like where it's like part like me being a kind of creative type, I guess. I would write letters home, obviously, and. I was trying to be entertaining in these letters to my parents and friends and family. And we had these backpacks that we had to carry everywhere. And you were not allowed to keep, you had a special notebook for letters home, basically. Mm-hmm. That notebook had to stay in your locker.
Mm-hmm.
But you could take it with you at certain occasions. So for some reason, that notebook with the letters that had not been sent yet was in my backpack.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not supposed to be. And then they would do random backpack inspections, and they inspected my backpack, pulled out that letter, that notebook, and read one of the first letters. And I started describing the company commander's drill. They're called company, but the drill instructors, the people with the hats that scream at you.
Yeah.
I started describing them in a very illustrative way, trying to be funny. Like, I called them the devil's own, and like, but I was just exaggerating, trying to be funny. And they might have found it funny, but they couldn't, you know, they were just like, so this is what you really think of us. Like, you know, just grilling me on this thing. And they're like, all right. And they sent me to, if you got in trouble, you had to go to this for, I think, a week, this thing called, or 3 days, 4 days, something like that. Mm-hmm. This thing called the Performance Enhancement Platoon. So everybody who screwed up at different points would go to this Performance Enhancement Platoon. And they would make you wear this orange belt around the base. And you had to walk and say left every time your left foot hit the ground. So basically you became a beacon for any staff on base to stop you, inspect you. You know what I mean? You were just this magnet. And then you stayed in separate barracks where you had three drill instructors on you all the time. You woke up an hour earlier than everybody else. You went to bed an hour later. And then one night they would parade you around to the newer companies that were coming in to show them what happens if you screw up.
Wow, that sounds like hazing at a fraternity, frankly. It's,
I mean, it is. That's basic training is hate.
Was
is,
it horrible or like how bad? I mean, it's hard to even relate to what you're saying, frankly. How bad? What was that like? Was it horrible?
It was humiliation somewhat by design, but also there was like a weird, like, it was like, this is why we're doing this to you. Like, and when it was over, it was not a thing. You were not like permanently branded. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you screwed up. Here's your punishment. Now go forth. And at the end of it, it was all fine. Mm-hmm. And
what about your relationships with the other guys or people? Was it mostly guys?
Mostly guys.
Was it lonely? No girls?
No, there was girls, but I mean, you can't fraternize. It was very frowned upon.
Was there social activity or?
No. I mean, social activity would be like at night, you know, like, I mean, one time we did go, I was in during Thanksgiving and they gave us like people from New Jersey, from like Cape May and Ocean City would come and families would come pick up recruits and take them to their house for Thanksgiving dinner. And then bring them back that night. So we got to do that.
Oh, God.
And I went with a friend that I had made there.
So is it really 4 years, no fun?
No, when you get out, it's fine. Like when you're, I mean, I was on a ship for 7 months and that, you know, that's just basic training. This is 8 weeks.
Oh, I see. It's not full
time. Not at all. When you get out, it's more, it's like being a, you know, it's probably closer to being like a firefighter or like a, you know, something like that. I guess.
So did you, what were the other people like? Did you feel like you, I mean, you know, cause you're a wacko comedian. So did you find other people that you had something in common with?
I did find friends, but it took, you know, they were a little more few and far between to find people I truly related to.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on the bulk? I mean, this is my impression is that they wouldn't be that educated and stuff. Is that true?
Well, the Coast Guard is a little different. Look, you have the ASVAB, which is the test you take to place for placement and aptitude for military stuff. Your score ASVAB, the requirement to get into the Coast Guard is higher than any of the other services.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, and you can't have a GED. You have to have a diploma.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And yeah, it's a little more discerning.
Oh.
So the people I was with, you know, a lot of them had college degrees. A lot of them were older than me even. I met a lot of really great people.
I bet. I did not know this about the Coast Guard.
It's very small. It's a very small service.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've worked on some advertising for the Army, so that's all I know about. But
yeah,
that's a whole other form of it. So what about your self-image? So how did you feel, like, what do you think changed about, like, how you saw yourself throughout being in the Coast Guard? Like, how did you change?
The one big thing I remember having, like, this crazy, like, weird, like, epiphany kind of thing where it was just like, oh, I am entirely responsible for my own actions right now. And when something goes wrong, I have to figure my way out of it, which is a thing that I don't know if I would have learned as fast otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I learned that at, you know, 18.
And what do you mean? Can you give us an example?
Where it was just like, if I forgot, you know, like the letters thing, like getting in trouble for that. I couldn't be like, come on, guys, don't worry about it. What's the deal? What's the big deal? Like, you know, like
there's so there no was talking no right out of it.
No negotiation.
Anything.
It was just like, sometimes you do something, you don't think ahead, you suffer the punishment and you go deal with that. You can't call in a favor. You can't be like, you can't beg for forgiveness. It's just like, major personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going through that and then getting out, it was just like, okay. And, you know, when you do bad in school, your self-esteem takes a real dive because you don't, right. You just hear all the time. You see the grades, your parents get mad, right. Your teachers get mad. And then you go through this thing, you make it through a thing that, you know, not everybody gets through. And then you're like, oh, maybe I'm not such a screw up.
So it made you feel better about yourself?
Oh, for 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I got into it later and I got my, and I had my job, I was not super great at my actual job. So then those problems started repeating themselves.
Right.
But then by that point, I was almost out and pursuing comedy.
Mm-hmm. What was your job in the mill?
I was a yeoman. I did like personnel work.
Like speaking to people?
No, like human resources, basically.
Yeah, human resources.
Data entry and personnel.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And
it was just boring. That's why I was bad at it.
Right. So that sounds like it was a really positive experience. And I just wanted, was reminding me of, I saw this movie about like World War One, and I was reminded of how like guys now don't have to go through any of that. And I think a lot of guys are structured in such a way that they may not be as organized or as like mothers or women or whatever. And I think that like if a guy went to the military and he could have gotten through all that, I do think there is some sort of respect that men had when every man did that. That
yeah.
They don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, if a guy went to Vietnam now, you think, like, wow, he went through that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird...
It's part of being... It used to be a part of being a man that men don't hang their hat on anymore.
No.
And I think it's kind of maybe a little bit confusing.
Yeah, being in a creative field, there's like a definite like cultural gap sometimes where it's just like, you know, I can go to the VA. I was going to the VA for cognitive behavioral therapy for a little while because they offered it.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to take advantage of this. And I would go to the VA in Manhattan once a week. And I'm in this environment, you know, this was just like last year, where I'm around a bunch of other veterans and people who have had at least the common experience of, you know, giving a a portion of their life to this thing. And it was so strange. It was like a weird comfort to be back in that environment again after being in comedy where everything is like nebulous and arbitrary and there is no chain of command. There is no...
It's really obvious the difference between everything being in control and everything being out of control, really.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you try to bring... So how, let's talk about how you evolved out of the Coast Guard into comedy. Do you think that sense of control is something that you've brought to comedy? How did you... Let's talk a little bit about how you... We only have 10 minutes.
Well, I started to realize I like hosting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of what that control... That is control. I mean, being a comedian is you're controlling the audience in some way, but the hosting thing I gravitated towards because it was like, oh, I'm kind of like driving the ship. Like it's a little more selfless. Mm-hmm. I don't get the ego feed of the pop-in star.
Right.
But I make sure everything runs on time. Mm-hmm. I have a job to do and I can steer the boat.
Mm-hmm. Is that a quality that you had before you went in the Coast Guard?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I lacked a lot of... Well, comedy gave me a lot of confidence to speak a little more, to be a little more vocal, but also so did the military thing. And, you know, just growing as a person, kind of, where you start to realize, well, if you don't speak, you won't get fed, whatever.
Right. Like, is that what would happen in the military?
Well, no, I'm just saying like in general. You have to ensure your own.
Right. Being responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
So do you feel like when you're with comedian, like in your career now, basically, do you feel like, I mean, it's kind of an advantage, but it's also like a certain kind of self-respect, I'm guessing, that you don't see common in most people that you're around. Most people I know, I'm not like that.
What here. with
like the sense of self-responsibility and control and getting things done and stuff like that? Or
I see
that?
It in some people where it has no relation to the military thing, but some people just have that, you know?
Yeah, that's are just some, naturally that way.
Yeah, in comedy it's not common.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you would have been that way naturally?
No. I don't think so.
It's a learned behavior.
It's little learned. I think it might have been there, but the military thing kind of tapped into it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then comedy kind of tapped into my weird, looser side.
Right.
You know, when I found that, it was like I found another part of myself.
Right. Because I think really good creative work comes out of having the right balance of structure and instinct. Right.
Yeah.
So you have to be able, the more you use instinct, like in comedy, it's very instinctual in the moment. You have to make sure that you have enough organization behind that. Right.
Yeah.
So that the spontaneous part is within a very nicely made box.
Right. Not as spontaneous as it appears.
Right.
Right. And film stuff too. I went to school for film after I got out. And that I find was a very helpful experience to understand, you know, group organization, being in charge of something.
Mm-hmm.
That is required. The funniest movie on earth was a procedure, you know,
right.
A system, 17 days of, you know.
So
whatever.
Did you see a lot of that happening, like how to get like your missions done and stuff like that?
Like when in film school?
Oh, I mean, in the Coast Guard.
No, it was just more like how to work as a team. Yeah, and understanding like role clarity, little stuff like that, like, you know, or being selfless when it's required.
So what kind of things do you think now have been like, are you conscious of the stuff that you learned in the Coast Guard when you do in your career now?
Not really. I think it's a little more habitual.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of little weird things I remember, you know, like I remember, that we used to get this like Coast Guard magazine for free. That is like, man, I would just like read it when I was in the bathroom or whatever. And somebody wrote like an op-ed about like having a goal and accomplishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic thing was just like, what if every day you should wake up and say, what can I do today to get me closer to this goal? And it sounded like a dumb, simple thing, but it was just like something like reading that mentality. Yeah. Before there was like a bunch of Instagram memes that said that,
right.
Was like, oh, okay. Yeah. 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 This is how I should kind of be functioning.
So, how about in your personal relationship, in your intimate relationship, like you have let's say you've been in a relationship for a long time.
It's
a successful relationship. So do you think that being in the Coast Guard helped you with that? Helped you have a successful relationship? How do you think that works?
I don't know how much that plays in. I mean, so she has asked me to wear my uniform.
really?
But I told her, like, I don't know how well it would fit. And it would probably look kind of dusty at this point.
I probably want to see it, too, if that was in her shoes.
But it's just more like it's like a self-respect thing. Like, let me be put together. The term they call it squared away, which just means like your uniform's pressed. You are ready to go. You have the plan of the day ready. Like, you know what you need to know to get to the next thing. And like that to me is just like, it's just like self-discipline, just self-respect, just being a good person. When you do those things, you are a better partner if you're not
having
to be dragged along.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
So I guess maybe it's in a roundabout
a certain
way.
Maturity.
Yeah.
There's a certain, also just like fundamental things like sharing a space. I hate sharing spaces, things like that. Are you good at that?
I'm pretty good at that.
I mean, yeah,
I lived on a ship for 7 months. With a bunch of other dudes, but the sharing of space thing, we're both not great. Like I think we would probably both like live in two halves of a twin house if we had our unlimited resources.
Who's messier?
What's that?
Who's messier?
Oh, good question.
Are you really neat? Because I'm like, you have to be neat in the Coast Guard.
A little bit, right? Yeah, a little bit.
So has that lasted or no?
Yeah, that's lasted.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you have to tolerate a lot of people you don't like. It's got to be like that, right?
Yeah, in the
military.
Yeah, right. You have to work with people. It's just like a job. You have to work with people you don't necessarily get along with. Because there's something that needs to get done or whatever.
Right. So you've learned that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if people learn that at like regular jobs out of college.
No, they don't.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great. I think this whole episode is going to be a great advertisement for the Coast Guard.
Yeah. Well, today it came out that officer had some sort of like crazy plan to shoot up a bunch of people. And he was a Coast Guard officer. Which is a real bummer, but I did read the article and he was a former Marine who ended up in the Coast Guard afterwards. So.
Lost, that's craziness. Somebody lost their mind. Oh, that was reminding me of what I wanted to ask you, but before you left, which is, so do you know how to shoot a gun?
Yes, I do.
Have you done it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've never shot at anybody. Like,
shot at anybody?
No.
Have you shot at birds?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up hunting.
Oh.
So I will still go back once a year to go hunt with my dad. I haven't shot anything in years, but I don't like to. It's more to do something with my dad to walk around the woods.
What do you shoot at?
Deer. We go buck hunting.
You kill deer?
I mean, I have.
Yeah. there's too many deer.
He lives in a very rural area where they end up on the side of the road. It's like there's a process to it, and it's, you know, anytime anybody in the family gets one, it becomes food, you know,
yeah,
the whole thing
right.
It's not like trophy hunting.
Right. I think, you know, how old were you when you learned how to use a gun?
I was pretty young because my dad was a cop. So I was probably like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of them. I don't own one.
No, but I think like feeling comfortable with a gun is a certain... not demystifying guns.
Yeah.
I think has to have a certain kind of mentality, which in your case is probably a good thing. You know, they're not as scary, but they're also not as you probably don't see them always as weapons.
No. I mean, not weapons for what they, you know.
Yeah, what we normal people see them
yeah,
as.
Yeah.
So there's probably something good about that. But I would imagine that would also have a big impact on how you see being in, you know, joining a military operation. If you're already comfortable with guns, that must have
been. Yeah. And again, the Coast Guard, way more humanitarian mission, which is why I chose them instead of any other branch.
Right.
I much would rather save people than hurt anybody.
Right. So anyway, you know what? We got 1 minute left, so we got to go. Thank you so much for being
here. Thanks for having me.
Fascinating.
I hope that was interesting.
It was. I can't wait to join the Coast Guard. I'm definitely. I'm going to get my husband to sign up.
Yeah, join the auxiliary.
So anyway, I want to tell everybody about the stuff that you're doing. You're going to be at the Comedy Cellar tomorrow, which is kind of a big deal. What time is that?
That's at 7:30. The Fat Black Pussycat will be hosting that show.
And then you're also going to the Middle East with Armed Force Entertainment.
Yeah, that's they do. Exciting, it's like a USO right? kind of tour, but it's not the USO. It's just a different group. Yeah.
And those people will have guns.
They will.
They'll probably
not the
love
other
you.
Comics.
They'll love you.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, you'll identify with them. And also, I want to make sure that everybody listens to your podcast, which is quittingcomedy.com.
Yeah.
And any other